Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
You're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast and all our social media platforms. Follow us on the Facebook page, also on Instagram and Snapchat, and as well on iTunes. Follow and subscribe us there. Leave a rating, leave a comment too, so you can help us out here on the show and let us know just exactly what kind of job we're doing, breaking down Battleground, and also talking to Hyann Young from Reality of Wrestling. By day, Geico full-time associate, and by night, chasing your dreams of becoming a professional wrestler for Reality of Wrestling, Booker T's promotion in Houston, Texas. I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter, Brian Berga, breaking down Battleground.
Break it down.
And listen, a lot of people have torn it down. A lot of people have kind of bashed it. We're going to kind of put the ribbon on it here as we recap the week that was in the world of professional wrestling. Trendsetter, how you doing, man? You survived Backlash. You're here. You survived Battleground. Yeah. You're here to live and talk about it and tell about your experience. Trendsetter, how you doing?
It felt like Backlash. I don't know what pay-per-view I was watching, basically. Yes, I survived.
I'm a fan of Backlash. What can I say?
Hey, it's been a good pay-per-view so far. You know, usually that was never the case, but with Battleground, had a lot to live up to from the first one, and you know, you and I both still hum the theme music to this day. The bar is set pretty high. You know, when you looked at the caliber matches like the Shield battling for the WWE Championship, you had the Club against John Cena, you know, and who didn't want to beat up John Cena? You had Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, had women's matches. So it had a lot of everything for everybody in the first ever Battleground pay-per-view.
So last year, Dean Ambrose is holding the WWE Championship up high for Team SmackDown. And this year, you have a Punjabi prison match. It just shows you the way that Battleground has kind of, you know, fallen flat in a year's time, you know. So, you know, let's talk about it, man. If you could give me one word of Battleground and just your thoughts about it with one word, and I think that's all you might need, what exactly would you describe it as?
A wash.
Wash?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's even a word that can describe as an adjective or a verb, but basically, if I have one word, mediocre. That was the pay-per-view. It looked like, towards the end, they were basically trying to fill in slots and try to make matches make sense. But basically, the whole focus was supposed to be on the WWE Championship. That fell flat. I mean, Jeff and I don't have to go out here and go on and on and dissect the matches and psychologies of things. You know, let's be honest, Jeff. Jinder Mahal, as much as I was excited to see him as a WWE champion, to see something different, because we're sick and tired of the Randy Orton's, the Roman Reigns, the John Cena's, you know, they always going to get title reigns. They're always going to be the faces of the WWE. It was something different. But, you know, Jinder early on was exciting. It was brand new. I'll give it 50-50. I think part of it's creative in terms of what they're trying to dictate him what to say, and another part of him not having the confidence to really go out there and just speak his mind. You know, now that Talking Smack is canceled, that was a great avenue for him to be able to talk and say, was really speak as Jinder, not the Jinder Mahal, the modern day Maharaja. And that's the last time I'm probably going to say that, Jeff, ever again, because, you know, everything he's done, his stick, the way he gets heat with the crowd, has just been so cookie cutter. And it's just the basic things you always see nowadays about, you know, people from a different heritage or different type of background, you know, saying they're being judgmental and racist and all this stuff. And it's just getting old for me. And for a guy like Randy Orton, for the lineage he has and all the success and how many times he's been a multiple world champion, for him to come out since he's been injured, and I still have yet to see him in a storyline that I find exciting, except one match with AJ Styles on a SmackDown Live show, and that was it. So right now, if you're looking at the storyline of how this whole pay-per-view was supposed to be relevant for the WWE Championship, it fell flat.
So a couple weeks ago, I kind of came out and made the statement that Randy Orton's kind of mailed it in, and you wouldn't go as far as saying that, and I don't want to attack Randy Orton, although, you know, he's had, you know, some reasons for people to attack him. And, you know, with the whole dive comments he made a couple months ago, and he's very much an easy target. He's also Randy Orton. So when you come at Randy Orton, and I'm just a fan here giving my two cents and like, you don't know anything about professional wrestling. You're not in there every day doing it.
Yeah.
But I can, safe to say, and critique Randy Orton, and as a fan of, you know, 20 some odd years, I think I have a good eye. And to think that maybe mailing it in is too rough, then you're not paying attention. Because if you look at the two worst matches so far in 2017, you can take a look at this matchup here at Battleground, and you can take a look at the matchup with him and Bray Wyatt in the House of Horrors, and and also WrestleMania, 33 in Orlando, Florida. Those are three matches right there that have Randy Orton on the card. So, come at me, Brian. Do you think I'm still over?
Come at me, bro.
Do you think I'm wrong, or do you think I'm overblowing it, or do you think I make a case that Randy Orton is kind of like right now just cashing checks?
You make a fair point, Jeff. You're entitled to your opinion. It's the manner in which you're saying it. When you say mail it in, there's a lot of people that can interpret that differently. The way I interpret it, mailing it in is that he's just resting on his laurels. When he goes in there, he's not giving it 100%. Now, I think no matter what, Randy Orton is giving it 100%. I just feel, and you have, experts even bigger than you and I, Jeff, right? Even guys in the world of WWE, Jericho, all these guys giving high praise of how talented he is. And I think in terms of wrestling, he's one of the most natural gifted guys in terms of having all the attributes that I've ever seen. That being said, it doesn't translate into a great match every single time. To me, what makes a great wrestler, great sports entertainer, whatever you want to call it, is to having the ability to make everybody you're working with better. Shawn Michaels had it. Chris Jericho has it. AJ Styles has it.
And Randy Orton doesn't have it.
And Randy Orton doesn't have it. He needs somebody else with him, another dance partner, to make him step up his game. When he's the person that's supposed to lead, he doesn't do that very well. He didn't do that very well with Bray Wyatt. He tried very hard, but again, it fell on deaf ears. And with Jinder Mahal, it's just fallen. He hasn't been able to elevate Jinder to that next level. Not that it's his responsibility, but that's what you get when you're a veteran. And unfortunately, with Randy Orton, I guess that's what you consider mailing in the bag.
And it's mostly going to lead to Jinder Mahal dropping the title to John Cena, but more on that as we get into this very, very great episode here, I think.
Sound like Jim Cornette, then.
More on that later.
When you look at this, and this is what I mentioned to you before, Jeff, it's amazing how now as we're on the road to SummerSlam, we're going to break down Raw and SmackDown a little bit here, but it's like now they've positioned the Universal title, despite the fact that it's still brand new, and I still don't believe it. It's only had three champions. It's had Finn, Kevin Owens, and Brock Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, four. They're now positioning that, and now the lineage, the history of the WWE Championship, which is on SmackDown Live, has completely become secondary to the U.S. title. And to me, it's just...
But here we are talking about the U.S. title not being pushed, and it's a relevant title now. That thing is a major player. I don't know if we like it being tossed around like a hot potato too much, but still, it's become a
very
important
title. Do we like any
title
be tossed around as a hot potato? I don't think we like
any
title.
But at least I think they're doing a story with this. I think there's going to be a continuation about this, but... you never know. You could see AJ Styles keep that title, and maybe he takes on Jericho at SummerSlam. But I think...
You just spoiled it for everybody now.
Yeah, because I know what made your night, and that is the return of Chris Jericho. Drink it in, man. What'd you think about that?
A very great surprise. We weren't expecting it. I'll give credit where credit is due. Chris Jericho does a great job, and so does WWE here in terms of when he does decide to come back. And, he is just a true showman. I kiss his ass enough, so I'm not going to keep doing it now. But, he's just perfect at coming back at the right times, which makes sense for him. Like I told you before, if he never came back, I wouldn't have been disappointed because, he's really accomplished everything. But the mere fact he does come back and bring some type of relevancy or throws a little monkey wrench of excitement in there, I mean, you heard the crowd. Your face was shocked. So was I. And we're like, wow, this is awesome. This is why we love pro wrestling, for that, anything could happen type of atmosphere. And that's what SmackDown Live did. And that's why you spoke about how, man, they should have had this type of card for Battleground more than the actual pay-per-view itself, because that fell flat. But just great excitement to see him come back, to see him kind of rehash that rivalry with Kevin Owens. And then that triple threat match, hey, we always critique triple threat four ways, fatal five ways, but in this case it made sense. But damn, could AJ get a one-on-one match to save his life? He can't. Shane, for some reason, although they have respect for each other now, cannot give AJ Styles a one-on-one match ever. He couldn't get it for the WWE Championship, and he couldn't get it for the U.S. title. He had to be in a triple threat match. Can the guy get a freaking singles match
and
every once in a while?
And give credit to Chris Jericho, because he could come out, lose 50 matches in a row, and the fans will still love him. He comes back on his return to SmackDown, takes the loss and the pin, and it protects Kevin Owens, and it makes AJ Styles, come out the winner. And you know what? No harm, no foul. Chris Jericho is still the greatest of all time. And Y2J, I don't know if it's just a one-time thing, and you're going back touring, but tons of respect for what you do in and out of the ring. You are one of, without question, one of our role models and what we strive to do. So, Chris Jericho, great to see him back, even if it was a one-night thing. We don't know. We'll find out next week on SmackDown whether we will see the Ayatollah Rock and Roller back for a longer period of time. But still, an awesome show. Again, SmackDown Live should have been Battleground. Battleground should have been SmackDown Live. So, it just, you know, you got to feel for the Philly fan, but you know what?
Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel.
You get Royal Rumble in 2018, so you can boo the hell out of Roman Reigns there and let your frustration out for Battleground there.
Exactly. I'd be excited that Kenny Omega will be participant number 3 in the Royal Rumble.
Oh, you think so, huh?
Yeah, who knows? I can dream, can I?
So four things from Raw real quick, and tell me which is the most important one that you want to talk about here. You had Samoa Joe, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, and Braun Strowman set for SummerSlam. You have what it looks like to be a tag team between Rollins and Ambrose. So you get 2/3 of the Shield going for a tag team run. Bayley now goes to SummerSlam and take on Alexa Bliss. And the Miz next feud could be against Jason Jordan. And adding that whole nepotism fact with the fact that Kurt Angle is the son of Jason Jordan and he's getting opportunities, you know, that probably shouldn't be handed to him. And the Miz probably dropping the title at SummerSlam. Which one of those four topics on Raw is the one that you've got your eyes set on saying, hey, this is the one I got to talk about with Jeff today?
Well, I think I don't even have to think about it. We have been discussing this more than the other three you had mentioned. This whole scenario now, we're going to have a fatal four-way for the WWE Universal Championship. I told you when it started and you asked me my opinion, you're like, Brian, what do you think about this main event here? And I said, I'll give you my honest opinion, Jeff. And maybe today I seem more of a negative guy, maybe a downer, but I really feel it's like,
oh, you're down today. I can tell
you. You know, here. The WWE, well, you know, I'm talking to you. That's why. But it really feels like the WWE right now is really just doesn't know what they want to do. It really feels like, you know, if you wanted the big match, I would have figured Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman as the main event for SummerSlam for the Universal title. Just that alone, people want to go see it because both of these are unstoppable forces going to be going at each other one-on-one. We had a little taste of it with the crowd chanting, this is awesome. And then some unfinished business where you would have a storyline with you know, two Samoans, Samoa Joe and Roman Reigns, who've had really good matches together, kind of try to settle the score or see if Roman Reigns can get a victory over him on a big stage like SummerSlam. It made sense to put these four in together. It was just like, well, we don't want to waste one or the other, so we're just going to put them all together. Here, guys, enjoy. You have four stars in the same ring at the same time.
I think
it's been done before.
I think that we should have a more sense of urgency knowing that maybe Brock Lesnar won't re-sign. So you want to get Braun and Brock, and then you can, you know, have Braun, you know, lose, but, you know, make him look good. Because WWE has done nothing but just make Braun Strowman, they've booked him great. So if you would have lost to Brock, pushed Brock to the pinnacle like no one, like nobody else did, you could have taken the loss and still would have come out looking good. And then maybe take on Roman Reigns at Mania. But, you know, right now what I think is that, listen, we got four guys here, and that's going to be a lot of beef. We got to reinforce that ring again, a fatal four-way. And I'm not a big fan of those kind of matches, but when you get four guys of this caliber, wow, you know what I mean? That is going to be, to me, it's still going to be must watch, especially because Brock and Braun, they're going to interact, so I'm going to be looking forward to that. But is it what I would have done? No, I would have done what you said. I would have done Brock and Braun.
At the end of the day, it's going to be must watch. But the thing is, and it goes back to what I mentioned before, how much focus they're putting on the Universal title of making this thing so prestigious where all these four huge competitors, no pun intended, but they're gigantic, to fight for this title because it means so much. And the WWE Championship is a secondary title, just because it's on the B show, obviously. So, you know, it just makes me shake my head for the mere fact that we're going to have Samoa Joe, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, and Braun Strowman going for the Universal title. And most likely we're going to have either John Cena and Jinder Mahal, which I'm probably predicting is going to happen, or Shinsuke Nakamura and Jinder Mahal, and they're going to get lost in the shuffle because nobody's going to want to care about this story. Where does Shinsuke fit in terms of rivalry with Jinder Mahal? With Jinder and John Cena, makes more sense. India versus USA, just like we did with Rusev, you know, Bulgaria against USA. I didn't think when the whole shakeup happened that this was going to be the direction SmackDown Live was going. I thought we were going to see some interesting matchups. They definitely teased Shinsuke and AJ Styles, but it doesn't look like that might happen. Who knows? It still might happen, depending on what happens with the number one contender match for the WWE Championship. But yeah, just everybody being lost in the shuffle and really nobody really giving a clear-cut direction of where anyone's going. You would think you see a lot that more on Raw, but not the case right now in terms of what SmackDown's doing with their roster, which, yeah, I would have to agree. It's kind of depleted right now because you would think you got Shinsuke, you got AJ, you got Sami Zayn, you got Kevin Owens. It's a pretty good roster right there, and right now they all seem to be kind of lost.
And Randy, if you want to give it to Randy, but I think that the second roster
shakeup. I'm surprised you gave it to him.
I think just because he's Randy Orton, you know what I mean? I think the roster shakeup, the second one, has been just really bad for SmackDown Live. But you know what? You're saying the direction of where everyone's going. I can tell you the direction where our next guest is going. It's going all the way up to the top, and that is Hyann Young from Reality of Wrestling. She is a Geico associate by day full time, and then by night she chases her dream of being a professional wrestler for one of the hottest promotions and one that's run really well by Booker T, former five-time WCW champion.
I was waiting for you to say it two more times there, but yeah,
five-time.
There you go. Yeah, it's just a great story, guys, of chasing your dream, of really going out there and not making any excuses. You know, Jeff and I, we have normal 9-to-5 jobs, if you want to call them 9-to-5 jobs, in this crazy business of media. But at the same time, that leaves no excuse that we come here and we do this, you know, maybe not feeling good sometimes, under the weather or just extremely tired. But we do it because it's a passion. We love it and we want it to be successful, as we are very happy that you guys are listening to it. So just a great story, great motivator too, which I think all our guests have been when we've spoken to them, because they're basically chasing their dreams and they're living in their dreams right now. And for Hyann Young, it's just another example of somebody who has that positive mindset, very young, and yet very mature for her age. And like I said, the sky's the limit for somebody like her. But great to hear their story and find out. You know, we were talking about, you know, where it started and where it all came from in terms of her loving professional wrestling. And this is what she had to say.
All right, Brian, great interview. We just keep getting better and better with the guests. And, you know, it's amazing what you can find on the internet and these great articles on Bleacher Report. And Ryan Dilber had a great, great article about this wrestler who is, by day, works at Geico, but is achieving and trying to aspire her dream as a female professional wrestler. And, you know, I just had to be like, I need to talk to Hyann. And it really is something that really reached us, and I think that we need to talk to her. So definitely Hyann, very, very interested in this article. And she joined us now on the High Spot Podcast. Hyann, how are you?
Good. How are you? That's quite an introduction.
Oh, thank you so much. See, I'm good at those. Well, the interviews is going to be like really awful, so don't get your hopes up there. How's everything going? How are you doing today?
Good. Good, just relaxing, got off of work, so probably going to hit up the gym a little bit later.
Always dedicated. So how did you get approached to do this? Because it's just very interesting, and of course the article is from Ryan Dilbert, and basically it's Geico employee by day, pro wrestler by night, and it's your story. And so how did you get approached by it?
Honestly, I just got I woke up one morning and I just checked my email before I go to work, and I just saw an email from him. Like, totally random. I had met him once before, like, in passing. I didn't even really, like, talk to him too much because he interviewed my friend Brennan Williams. He trained with Reality of Wrestling for a little bit, and now he's in the Performance Center at NXT. So I met him that way, but, like, very, very briefly. Like, I don't even think I remembered his name. And then I got an email from him about him wanting to do an article. So I was like, okay, cool. This is awesome.
And so so tell us about how did you get into it? Tell us the first time that you were like, wow, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to be. I want to be a professional wrestler.
I probably started watching wrestling around like 1998, maybe. And my family, like, we're all huge wrestling fans. We always, like, would go watch it. So I remember, like, the first time I saw it, I saw Sting, but I didn't know it was Sting because it was WCW. And I thought it was, like, Kiss, like the band.
Oh, gotcha. Is this a Sting with the black and white, or is this still with the multicolor?
Yeah, with the black and white. Okay. I saw him, and I thought it was, like, is it that band or whatever? Like, I was totally confused. And then So I kind of was like flipping through the channels. I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. And my older cousin, Johnny, was like, hey, you totally have to watch this. It's so awesome. And my mom was like, yeah, you know, we used to go to the Houston Coliseum and stuff like that. So it was just something that I was would always watch with, like, my family and stuff. We'd always go to see WWE when they come into town. And, you know, I was a hardcore fan, would watch it all the time. And I just would tell everybody. I remember being, like, in second grade, telling everybody I wanted to be a pro wrestler. So that's just kind of been my thing.
And what's the reaction that you get when you say that at that age? You're like, yeah, okay, you know.
It was so weird because, like, nobody at my school watched wrestling. I was, like, the only wrestling fan. Especially being a girl on top of it all, it was, like, I was the super minority. So it was kind of weird.
Well, you know, what's funny about that, Hyon, is that you just said it yourself. You knew at a young age watching that that's something you wanted to do. Now, as obviously you got older and the dream became more of not just a dream but could be a reality, did you get a lot of support from the family? I mean, I know your friends probably thought, you know, this is, you know, far-fetched, wrestling, okay, haha, didn't understand it. But did you get a lot of support from your family behind it as you're chasing your dream?
So at the time when I first started training, I was in college. So my mom thinks it's cool. Like, she thinks it's cool, but she doesn't really, like, support it just because she doesn't want me to get hurt. Like, she's just being a mom and, like, doesn't like seeing me wrestle because she's afraid I'm going to get hurt. And
of course, you're her baby.
Her biggest concern. Yeah, like, that's her biggest concern. But everybody generally thinks it's pretty cool. But they're always like, oh, we don't want to go unless we know you're going to win. I was like, well, I'm not going to tell you if I'm winning. That, like, ruins the moment. They're like, well, we don't want to go. I'm like, come on, guys. They take it very seriously, too. Like, they don't get the whole scripted part. Like, they totally believe it's real.
Wait. Are you telling me that it's not? Oh, she just spoke. But talk about, you. Are you still in school?
No, I graduated, like, two years ago, May 2015, I graduated from college.
Okay, and so now you're doing this full-time gig at Geico, and that's your full-time job. Mm-hmm. It's your full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we talked about what the family thinks of it, and we read about what, you know, your coworkers think of it. And so just when people ask you about that, like, how do they react to it when you're like, well, yeah, I also do this wrestling thing on the side, and that's basically what I want to be.
Yeah, people are always like, really? You don't look like it. I would never be able to tell. Like, people would think, like, I don't know, that I would never do it. I don't know why. They're like, yeah, you don't look like a wrestler. And I always get that. Or, like, what weight class are you in? Most people don't get it. Unless I have to be like, oh, like WWE. And then some people get it. And then, like, girls that I meet, I'm like total divas. And then they're like, oh, total divas. So sometimes I have to, like, really break it down for people.
Yeah, for most people, the diva aspect of it is probably something that, you know, women probably want to break away from. They want to be considered just wrestlers or just superstars in general. Don't want to be labeled that. And, you know, it depends on your cup of tea and what floats your boat there. But what I'm interested in, Hyon, is something that I read in the article, too, that I can kind of relate to as well, is that, you know, I grew up very shy. I grew up very, as Jeff would call me, an introvert. But obviously when I'm doing the show and interviewing people who are very passionate or in the business, I just kind of...
He blooms like a flower.
Yeah, it's like flipping a switch. Yeah. It comes natural to me, and I'm very enthusiastic, and I'm not as shy anymore. You talked about how your demeanor, you're very laid back, and then when you go through that curtain, those lights hit, it's an adrenaline rush. Can you somehow put into words, I know it's really hard to right now, what type of feeling it is to kind of go out there and portray something? I mean, is your character really you times 100, or is it something kind of you're just trying to figure out as you're, you know, progressing in the business?
I think it's more like, because I'm pretty competitive, and I just kind of like turn it up a little bit more, especially on like the aggression aspect when I wrestle. That's kind of, it is kind of me just turned a little bit up, but
a little bit
up. A lot up, because I'm pretty chill in my normal life. Pretty boring, I think. So yeah, it's just.
Don't say that, Hyon. You got to put yourself over. Come on, don't do that. You always got to put yourself over.
I'm pretty chill. So, yeah, definitely the kind of just being in the environment kind of hypes you up a little bit too. and you get around everything, and you get a little bit more hype, and then your match is coming up, so you get more hype, and you hear the music, and you're just like, okay, it's about to happen. So that's when you just turn it on. You just become somebody else.
We're talking to Hyun cool. Young Olvera. You can follow her on Twitter @_HyunYoung. Again, thank you so much for being on the show. Now, when they followed you here on this article, you came up short in your matchup against Kayla Lynn, right? No shame in tapping out or with an arm break or anything like that. There's no shame in that. But you are very well known in the reality of wrestling. It's a promotion for Brick T. Talk about that experience and how it was like meeting him and getting a chance to be under his tutelage.
So the first time I ever met Brooke was at Christmas Chaos, which is like our annual like show in December. It's like probably the second biggest show of the year that we have. And he was doing a meet and greet, and I went and I met him, and I was like super starstruck. My hand was like shaking, taking a picture with him. It was crazy. So I was like, oh my God, I was watching the show and I was like blown away. I was like, oh my God, how do I do this? He was like, you're a school kid. And I was like, all right, cool. So what did I do? I saved up my money. I was in a sorority, so I quit my sorority and saved up money. And I went to, I did a fantasy camp, which was kind of like a, kind of try it out for a day type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I ended up really liking that. And then I started training full time at Brooks. And he's there a lot, so you definitely get to know him, and he gets to know you, for sure. He expects a lot, and he doesn't teach you, like, the moves. Like, you can learn that anywhere, pretty much. But he really teaches you how to put a story together in the ring, how it makes sense, and ring psychology and entertainment. That's like what he's really, really good at teaching. And it's always, you're always learning with him. I remember he would say things to us when I first started training, and it would not make any sense to me. Like, it would just go over my head. And then now that I've been there for, a couple of years, now when he says things, I'm like, oh, that's what he meant when he said that like 2 years ago, and I didn't get it. So he's a really good teacher, and he always, I feel like he really does see people that train under him almost kind of like a second family or like other children to him, because he really does like invest a lot in you. Mm-hmm. And he's very honest and truthful. And so he, when he gives you feedback, like, that he really cares, because you can see how he is with people that are not, from his school, and he's always respectful and everything like that. But he always gives us the more, He nitpicks with us a lot more than he does with other people, because he really does want us to like be the best and succeed. And he always talks about how he's not going to bring in, he doesn't like to bring in like ex-WWE superstars, ex-ECW, ex-WCW, these indie names to reality of wrestling, because he doesn't care about that stuff. He wants to make us the stars. And he really does a good job of doing that. So I really can't knock him on anything he does. He's a really, really good teacher.
Well, obviously Booker T sees something in you, and you said that, sometimes the tough love, sometimes being a little harder on you is just to motivate you. He said a lot of interesting things when he was quoted here in the article, and, talking about your growth, but also saying that it, could be a lot better. Is it something where it means like the time, because we know you have your, you got to pay bills, and that's no joke. It's real life. But do you think that if you put, more time and, like you said, doing maybe more weekend shows and have more availability, do you think you'd be on the faster track, or do you think it's just other things that he's nitpicking, or is it just in-ring things?
I think it's just kind of like an overall picture. I know when I first started training there, I was there every day because I was in college, and the school was maybe like 15 minutes away. The school's like an hour plus away from me now, so I can't really make it out there every day as much as I would like to. But I'm sure that plays a factor in it all. But also, when I first started training there, I was 20 years old, and now I'm 23. And so just being from a stupid, immature college kid to more of an adult, you know, that has a real job and pays bills and stuff. Definitely a maturity aspect, too, when it comes to, like, training and all that stuff plays into it as well. I always tell people, like, books is a really good place to get, like, fine-tuned, not always to start out, because it there's a maturity aspect that you need to have going in there in order for you to be the best that you can be.
Hi, Ann, what do you think has been the biggest learning curve for you? I mean, you had mentioned certain things about, like, you can kind of learn the moves anywhere. A lot of it's ring psychology, and especially when you have the experience, like a guy like Booker T has, that's definitely vital information from anybody who's been in the business and has been successful in it. What's been the biggest learning curve for you? And secondly, I guess it's a two-part question, what has been the biggest misconception you had when you first wanted to kind of do this? When you, was it taking your first bump, or was it more like a week in, you're like, oh, my body can't handle it? What was the biggest misconception? What was the biggest learning curve for you right now at this point?
Right now, I'm really trying to work on having more complex matches. You know, when I first started, it was kind of like that pre-women's revolution going on. Before that started happening in NXT and stuff. So, you know, we were getting kind of 5-minute matches type things. And now, you know, that the business has kind of evolved to include more women and more time and more matches, trying to kind of evolve with that too and grow out of just having 5-minute, 7-8 minute matches, but be able to, like, put on, you know, longer matches that make sense and really get people invested. It's kind of, you know, what I'm working towards too, which, like I said, Book definitely helps a lot with that too. Mm-hmm. And he's been really on board with putting more women's matches on the show and giving us more time as well. So he's definitely helping with that as well and kind of growing more talent and our development too, not as you know, wrestlers and entertainers, but also like our ring psychology and stuff like that.
Hi, Ann, you're very all about fun facts. Here is a fun fact for you. coming in August, it'll be a year since you were actually on Monday Night Raw. You compete against Nia Jax. Talk about that experience, almost being a year since you've done that. How did it feel? Tell us about the whole day leading up to it. How did you go about? You know, I'm sure Booker T had a hand in that. Tell us all about that day and just everything you're feeling, because like they said, you didn't know if you're going to be able to go on there. You didn't think so. And then they call you to do it. So tell us all about that day.
So, God, I can't believe it's almost been a year.
Time flies.
It hasn't felt that long.
See, because you're so young, it's really, yeah, exactly. But when you're our age, you know, time really does fly.
Shut up, Jeff. What the hell?
Well, she got up, she had her breakfast. Okay.
A common misconception that people think is that Booker helped me get on there. But actually, Booker had nothing to do with it. Like, zero with me working on Raw. I was talking to my trainer. He had moved to Florida. And he had messaged me one day, and he was like, have you been watching Raw lately? I was like, no, I haven't really been watching it. And he was just like, well, you should. I was like, okay. he's like, because they're using a lot of girls right now for Nia Jax. And I was like, oh, yeah, I think I saw like a few of those or whatever. And he's like, you should really get on there. I was like, well, how am I going to do that? And he was like, here, contact this person, blah, blah, blah. So I contacted them, the guy that does the extra talent for WWE. And it's like, I shot him like an email with kind of like my name and where I've worked, how long I've worked, and kind of just like a picture and like a YouTube video or whatever. And I really didn't think anything would happen at all. I was more sending the email to tease my trainer who wanted me to do it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, whatever. And then I think like the next day or two, I get an email back and they're like, here, you know, these are the dates. Can you make it? And I was like, yeah, I'll go. And so I went, but I think the week before they didn't have Nia have a match with anybody. So I was like, not sure if they were going to use me or not. And I was the only girl there. So I was like, oh, maybe they will, maybe they won't, who knows. So they had gone around and they picked Americos that night, who worked Braun Strowman. And they picked him, and they just kind of looked at us, and they're like, okay, that's all we need. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess it's not going to happen. Oh, well, you know, so let me just eat all this catering because it's all the food's amazing backstage. So I was like stuffing my face off like catering. And then as soon as I finished my food and I'm like full, they're like, yeah, we're going to use you. So get me your gear. So I was like, ah, okay. Which you guys had told me this earlier. So,
real quick, how good was the catering?
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. It's like,
I've heard stories about it. Is it that good?
Oh yeah. Like, I go for the catering. Absolutely go for the catering.
So you had pie. What kind of pie did you have?
I had the pie. It was apple pie.
All right.
It was good. It was good.
So she ate the whole thing, and then he had to get in your gear to get ready to face Nia Jax.
Yeah. So they, I introduced myself to her, and she was really, really nice. And they had me go take like a physical or whatever. And they gave me the script that I had to read for the backstage setting, so a little interview in the back before the match. So I read that. It was like two sentences. And so she just kind of went over what we wanted to do or what she wanted to do in the match. And I was like, okay, that sounds pretty simple, pretty basic and straightforward. So I was like, okay, well, I'm not too worried about that. And so I did my... after we kind of just talked it through really quickly, then I had to go and do like makeup and do the interview. And that was pretty easy too. It was really crazy because reality wrestling is actually run very, very similarly to WWE. So I was not really surprised by anything of the way they did things because Book runs it very similarly. So like I said, I wasn't like surprised or not prepared, I guess. So after we do all that, we're just kind of waiting. And then they were like, okay, now the match is going to come up soon. So we're like in Gorilla watching the match before. I think it was Chris Jericho was the match before.
You're so lucky.
Ours. Because I think we're at the very beginning of the show. And so we're kind of waiting. And Nia is just like, millions are, she looks at me, she goes, millions are watching on TV and there's thousands in this arena. Aren't you nervous? I was like, well, when you put it like that.
And now I am, thanks. I know that pie is coming up now.
I really didn't think about it. I wasn't thinking about it at all because, you know, at the row, it's a televised show, so I'm not really uncomfortable being around a camera. But we're not live TV is the difference. So I was like, you know, it's going to be kind of weird. And so the lights were off in the arena and it was a commercial break. So I came out during the commercial break and the referee, Bennett,
Sean Bennett.
I knew we had mutual friends who were also wrestlers. So he knew of me, but I didn't really know him. So he's like, oh, you'll be fine. And he was kind of like talking to me in the ring. He was like, soak it all in because we're not on camera yet. We're not on TV. So just soak it in. Look at everybody. You know, you're in your hometown and, you know, the Toyota Center. So I just kind of stopped and was just like staring at everything. I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then the lights came on and he was, it's so crazy how much the referees like run the match because they are very aware of like, when a commercial break is and, you know, when they're going to start taping again. And like when the camera's on you and it's really cool. So the bell rang and, you know, I got hit with that clothesline and it was the hardest, like legit, I'm telling you, it was the hardest thing anyone ever done to me. Like I've never seen stars in a match. That was the only time I've ever seen stars in a match. She hit me that hard, but it was pretty cool. I can't, you know, afterwards we went backstage and I saw Triple H there and I was like, he was like, you did good, kid. And I was like, oh my God, you talked to me.
That's great. That is great.
And I went to the bathroom and I cried. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I did it. My childhood dream. I finally did it.
Hi, some people don't even get that.
And you got that.
I know. It blows my mind.
Yeah, and they can never take that away from you. I mean, you know, if
nobody can. I can always show my kids too.
Exactly. Seriously, I mean, that's something that's probably maybe happened maybe a little bit early because you're 23. You're young still. You're 22 then at that time then, right? That was almost about a year ago.
Yeah, I was 22, yeah.
So, Brian,
it's very easy. Oh, thanks. Yeah, of course. Especially when you're saying we're old fossils, Jeff, so you stay quiet. But, yeah, I mean, it's really hard to take it all in, as Sean was telling you during commercial break, but that's just a great thing, the mere fact that, you know, that's, I could basically say what everybody we've always spoken to said they've always wanted to work for WWE. That's always like the main goal because of, you know, the notoriety. And I'm sure Booker has mentioned to you in terms of, you know, classes and teaching about psychology, it's all about branding yourself as well. You want to brand your name of who you are so that, you know, when you do get that exposure like you did on TV with Nia Jax, now you'll be able to be booked other places. Now, coming off of that, were you getting then a lot of notoriety in terms of other local promotions in the area wanting to use you since you'd been on TV?
Yes, a lot. Booking fee went up.
Booking definitely went up, of course. And that's a good thing.
The book was, yes, yes, yes. So it was really cool. After that, I started working in, Louisiana a lot more. It was really cool because people were actually, like, paying for my hotels, and I wasn't having to, like, you know, drive, you know, hours and hours back and forth. One thing people don't understand is, like, Texas is a huge state. Like, it's ginormous.
Oh, we know. We were there for WrestleMania.
Yeah, so it's like you can literally drive 12 hours west and you'll still be in Texas. Yeah. So it's very hard to get out of Texas, like literally speaking. And so, and there's so much wrestling in Texas too. So it was really cool to start working outside of the state and, you know, having people, you know, kind of paying for you to go out and make that trip out. It was really cool too. Because like I said, just to get out of the state, it's forever. And to do a wrestling show, it takes a lot to get, you know, the travel. So it was really nice to kind of get that as well and start working a lot more. I loved it.
With that being said, I know you have a full-time job. And so a lot of that depends on, you know, using your vacation time and being very smart with your timing in terms of when you do get booked or when you book yourself. But in the near future, do you see yourself maybe broadening your horizons? I know you've been booked out of state. You mentioned Louisiana. Anything in terms of maybe trying the East Coast? You know, trying Philly, trying, you know, the New York metropolitan area for independent wrestling.
Yeah. So a cool thing about GEICO is we have, like, a bunch of regional offices around the country. So if I wanted to go live in San Diego, we have an office in San Diego. If I wanted to go to Hawaii, I can go to Hawaii. If I can go to Virginia, I can go to Virginia, D.C., New York. We have offices there in New Jersey, Florida. So I'm really, really super fortunate that, like, my job is super supportive of, like, what I do. And I can pretty much move anywhere in the country and still have a job and still be able to do, you know, what I want to do. So my goal within, like, the next few years is to move to DC and start heading up the East Coast as well.
How did the NXT tryout go? I read that it was in February, and you said you had no regrets. So obviously you felt like you gave you 100%. How did that go? And do you feel that something like that could be in the not near future, but is that an end game to be in somehow in NXT?
Honestly, like, leading up, when I found out about the tryout, it was like in December, and like I trained every single, I didn't ever miss a day of training. I'd be so exhausted, like dying, and be training until like 3 a.m. and then like go to work. Every day I was training. My diet was like on point. So when I got there, I felt like I was ready. And, you know, I think I sent the article too. Like, when I saw all the models and stuff, I was like, oh crap, they're really pretty. So that was like a bit of an intimidation factor. But then once I got in the ring, I was kind of like, and watching them kind of struggle to do roles, so I was like, hold up. They're in my house right now. Like, they're not going to upstage me.
Yeah, that's your ring.
So, say what?
I said that's your ring, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So when I got there, I felt like I was the best person there. But that's just me. I didn't struggle with the trail is really, really hard and it's super physically demanding, but I felt like I gave it my all and I really don't have any regrets. Like, I never stopped. I don't regret anything that I did. And I talked to an anonymous Smiley while I was there, and he was just kind of like, you know, keep sending your stuff in, you know, always keep us updated on what you're doing. He was talking about Ember Moon, Athena, who also trained that rally wrestling for a little bit. You know, he's saying like, oh, you know, she didn't get it on her first trial. If you don't get it, you know, keep sending your stuff in. And so I felt like they really liked me over there.
Listen, if they like you, you will always be on their radar. You may not even think that you're on their radar, but you are, you know?
Yeah, no, it was a really, really good experience. And, you know, they did talk about possibility with the women's tournament, and that ended up not going through, but it was still such a really good experience. And, you know, after you've kind of been wrestling for a little bit, you kind of realize that, you know, yeah, WWE is really, you know, the biggest promotion, but like indie wrestling has never been as big as it is now. And I kind of just see WWE as like another promotion, you know, just like any other one. Obviously this one's the biggest and pays the most money. And it's definitely, you know, the one that I grew up watching. But at the end of the day, I didn't say I wanted to be a WWE diva. I said I wanted to be a wrestler. So, you know, being a wrestler means I want to go to Japan. I really want to do, like, Shimmer and get better, you know. And even if for some reason I don't, you know, get a WWE contract in my lifetime, I just can still say that I did Raw and I had a tryout, which is a lot more than, you know, a lot of other people can say. So my goal really is just to be the best wrestler that I can be.
She wants to be the best in the world.
And, you know, if down the line WWE decides to sign me, then that's awesome. And if they don't, well, that's okay, too. I'm okay with that.
Something really interesting you mentioned, too, you mentioned Japan. And like I told you before, maybe you were looking at broadening your horizons. So at the tryout, I'm interested. Obviously, the coaches were there, scouts. Was any of the NXT talent there, too, to ask questions? Like you mentioned Amber Moon. Was like she there in that area where you could kind of talk to her, maybe ask her for some advice? And did they mention possibly, hey, maybe she headed to Japan? And you know, because right now, like you mentioned before, this whole women's revolution and women's wrestling is really gaining more of a chance than it's ever had before. Is that a possibility for you as well?
I did see Ember while I was there, but I didn't really talk to her because it's a very tense situation being there at the performance center because, you know, you really – like laser focused on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But I did, in regards to like, kind of like advice, my friend Brennan, who's there right now, he did give me a lot of advice when it came to the tryout and stuff like that. You know, he was just kind of like, you know, prepare yourself for this, prepare yourself for that, you know, don't be on your phone in the performance center kind of mm-hmm. thing. That's a big no-no. So, but yeah, I didn't really get too much interaction with the NXT talent. Most of them, the ones that I did see were running the tryout. So they were just kind of like facilitating and helping the coaches. Gotcha. Yeah. So I didn't really get to see or really get to interact with them too much outside of that, that environment.
We talk about the whole women's revolution and we talk about people like, you know, Charlotte, Sasha Banks, Bayley, Becky Lynch, who've kind of like taken women's wrestling to another level, and it's kind of gotten out of the whole diva mode. Who do you look at right now? Who do you try to either emulate or do you try to fashion your style as? And who right now do you think just has killer matches that you got to watch? I know you were up close for Nia Jax, but who right now do you like kind of look up to now on the wrestling scene?
Oh, Charlotte's my favorite. Mm-hmm. For sure. I feel like when it comes to like in-ring style, I try to like emulate her the most because I love how aggressive she is. She's so athletic in the ring too. And I just like that, like the merging of those two styles together, like the athleticism with like the aggressiveness. That's what I like to watch. So that's kind of what I try to bring into the ring as well. So she's like my super favorite. She's Book's super favorite too. Book's always talking about Charlotte. He's like, you know, we need the girls to be like Charlotte. And I'm like, I know. That's what I'm trying to be.
Yeah, and you're definitely getting there. I mean, we've seen some of your work. Jeff and I are huge admirers of your work as well. So hopefully if you do get a chance within the year to make it to D.C. or, you know, work around the metropolitan area, Jeff and I would love to try to catch you and see you live up close in person because, you know, we think sky's the limit for you and your star is definitely rising, especially being on Raw. And right now you're getting hot. Your brand is getting there.
I mean, so she handles herself awesome on an interview so far. So I think
you're professional.
Exactly. Professional. Listen, I on your Twitter in the background, there's a picture of you and Fala Ba, who actually wrestles at WrestlePro and, of course, is on now Global Force. I almost said Impact, but I didn't say TNA. Just real quick story about him. How did a little story about that picture there. It's on your Twitter.
Oh, man, I love Fala. He is so awesome.
He's awesome. So, he's awesome.
Bennett, yes, he is so awesome. He's so good. Like, I just see some of these, like, you know, wrestlers, and I'm like, oh, I just want to be as good as you. He's like one of those. So he actually, Bennett, the ref for my match with Nia Jax, he actually knew Fala, too. It's kind of how he knew of me. But we did this kind of, like, invasion angle at the Row a couple years ago with, at the time, I think it was I forgot what it was called, Pro Wrestling Syndicate at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And the Row. So they did, like, this little invasion angle. And Booker really liked Fala and the Bodies. So, you know, they were always coming in. So I was I was his only valet.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I started out. I went from like backstage interviewer to valet to wrestler. So before I was actually able to get matches at the Row, I was his valet. So I would hold his title for him, and he would always his thing was like he would demask luchadors and wrestlers. Mm-hmm. So we'd walk out with the masks and stuff. So that's kind of how I got to know Fala. But he's super cool. He's really, really smart. And like I said, in-ring psychology, I'm like super jealous.
Yeah, no, we see him here for WrestlePro, and we see him on Global Force. So definitely good things. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And like me and Brian were saying, like, we see nothing but big things for you, you know. And just want to congratulate you because right now your resume looks pretty good. And at 23, it can only get better. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. You guys have an awesome night.
Wow, great story with Haiyan Young.
Man, she's so adorable.
Such a cute voice, but you know what? She is a tough one in the ring, so don't let that voice.
Oh, she can kick my ass, of course, yeah.
Listen, and just inspirational, again, chase your dream. Don't ever, you know, think it's too hard, and don't think you can't do it because she's living proof that you can do it. And listen, she's going to get, you know, she's going to get to where she wants to be. There's no doubt about that, too. I mean, she's already got a matchup against Nia Jax on Monday Night Raw on her resume. So she is above and beyond light years from where anyone else is, and she's only going to get better. So young, and, you know, the sky's the limit. We hope to see her one day in the East Coast. Hopefully that happens soon enough. And, of course, you can tell a quick story about Fala Ba, which is great to hear. And, of course, Fala Ba from WrestlePro and you know, GFW and Impact. So, you know, great stories, and we wish her nothing but the best and hope to have her back on soon enough.
Yeah, and the great thing about the whole scenario, Jeff, is that she's had a taste of it. And now that she's had a taste of what the big league, supposedly, which everybody wants to go to, which is WWE, because we all grow up as fans watching WWE programming. It's the first thing we probably do watch. So she's had a taste of it. Now the question is, will that hinder her or get her even more motivated? And from talking to her and hearing her speak about everything from the funny stories to catering, there's no doubt that she's definitely hungry, no pun intended in terms of catering, but she's hungry to get back to that level.
And you always got
to
go for that pie, right? You always got to, catering, that's the one thing you go for. Kevin Owens showing it that you go for that pie. And, you know, Haiyan, she definitely, when you go to catering, that's the first thing you go to is the desserts.
Well, she's got a sweet tooth, and she is a sweet lady. So can't wait to have her on the show again.
Very nice.
And can't wait to see her on the East Coast.
All right, Bryce. So Royal Rumble 2018 now. Tickets on sale in Philadelphia. Are you going to take me?
Yeah, I'm going.
Are you going to take me?
I'm going.
Okay. Well, listen.
what do you think? I'm made of money here? I work 7 jobs. Jeez, I basically keep my head above water.
Did you get 2 that I didn't know about?
Yeah, basically.
Boy, you are just, I'm telling you, you are right now, I can compare you to the Christian on the Edge and Christian podcast. You're just so like.
I don't talk in a monotone voice. That's you every day, except when you're on the show, High Spot Podcast. If you guys heard Jeff off the show.
This is not me. I depress the trendsetter so much.
Oh, my God.
It's even funny. Yeah. And we are just like jabbing here, me and him today, so.
I'm not jabbing at all. It's like you're looking at me for something, and like I don't know what you
for
want
answers,
from me.
For answers, damn it.
Answers for what? You're attacking me, and you're taking jabs at me. I'm like, okay, I'm not going to reciprocate the jab.
So where are we going to go for this one? Are you going to come over, or am I going to come over? I'm going to have to come over because I don't have a place. Ric Flair, 30 for 30.
Oh, wow. Talk about depressing. Now you just took it to another level, Jeff.
You're depressed about the whole Ric Flair 30 for 30?
No, you're saying I have no place to live.
Oh, come on.
Can I play the smallest violin for you, Jeff? Jesus, God, get over it, man. Yeah, 30 for 30, you can come over, Jeff. Yeah, I'll have the chips ready for you. But in terms of the Royal Rumble, yeah, we're definitely going, man. We're going to make that trip down to WrestleMania. It's the road to WrestleMania, to Philadelphia. Never been to Philadelphia before, so going to be pretty excited to do that. Spend a couple days there to watch TakeOver and the Royal Rumble. Because at that point, that's WrestleMania season, man. So you can't be... you can't help but not go there, especially since it's so close by for us. But, you know, speaking of the Ric Flair 30 for 30, you know, I thought what they did with Mike and the Mad Dog, which, you know, Mike is definitely a somebody you look up to a lot. You looked up to that show a lot, too.
Love the Pope. I get teary-eyed when I saw that. You love the Pope.
But you love both of them, too. It wasn't just Mike Francesi. He's probably one of your favorites. But at the same time, that show, you know, carried you on through some difficult times. As we all do as we grow up, right?
That's my childhood, dude.
It's your childhood.
It's just living your childhood and all the sports stories and, you know, what no one could depict the New York scene more than Mike Francesa and Chris Russo. So I loved it.
When was the first time you listened to Mike and the Mad Dog? Can you remember the very first time you listened to him?
I can tell you when I was in WFAN. Okay. I listened to WFAN when the Mets were on and I was sitting. Actually, I was going to sleep early because I was in grade school and I had the little radio in my ear and I would wake up sore from the headphones being in my ear all night.
Jabbing ear.
And I was into the Mets. God bless me. And the Mets that time were, whew, you know, you got to really be a fan. And then I would actually then wake up to Steve Summers, Captain Midnight. And then I guess eventually during the summertime, during summer vacation, I would put them on because me and you would hang out a lot. And then we would have the Mike and the Mad Dog just blasting. And that's all I do, listen to sports radio, man. People listen to music, and I am so far removed from music, and sports radio is my thing. But getting back to the Ric Flair 30 for 30, and Brian, you've put up with my Mike and the Mad Dog for years, so I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But going back to the 30 for 30, Ric Flair, finally, it's been like a few years now that this thing has been in the works. And a guy that I've actually had a chance to talk to, Rory Karp, who is the director, and I hope we will get him on when that comes out, November 7th, by the way. Very talented. He did the I Hate Christian Laettner documentary for 30 for 30.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is going to be great. And, you know, this looks kind of like a redemption kind of a story because the man lived the character. The man was the nature boy. He was Ric Flair. He was silent and profiling. He was that kiss-stealing, wheel-dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, you know what I mean?
Of course.
And then, you know, as the years go by, you can't be nature all the time. So hopefully it's a redemption story, and I can't wait to watch it because I love Ric Flair.
There's no doubt he's still a nation. I don't think they'll ever go away. He'll still be doing that. But you're right, man. It's a story, seems like a story of redemption. But to me, it's just a great... You know, it came up to the movie The Wrestler, which was so depressing. We saw it starting to make your work. But I thought it was a great eye-opener in terms of how things can go the wrong way, the pitfalls of this life and this business that you and I love so much that we talk about. Because, you know, you live that lifestyle, you're on the road, you're basically running on fumes every single day, but eventually it catches up to you. And we've known from our childhood and seen some of our favorites, you know, pass on, that it's very hard for them to separate that line of what's fiction, what's reality, because we've said it before, you know, the best characters in the world are the guys that are themselves with the volume turned up really, really high. So it's like, it's really a part of who they are, but, you know, again, it's over embellished. So with a guy like Ric Flair, it's just to see him at the Hall of Fame, see how emotional he was, apologizing to his family, and then to see this documentary and the small bits that we saw in the preview trailer, you're right, I feel like the redemption song, and hopefully Ric Flair can look on and enjoy this late stage of his life as, you know what, wrestling doesn't have to define him anymore. You know, he is the greatest wrestler, in my opinion, that probably ever laced up a pair of boots. but that doesn't define who he is. Because now that lives on vicariously through his daughter, through his family, and his legacy. We talked about a guy like Chris Jericho could lose a million times, no one would care. Ric Flair could do anything and still be entertaining. And so for that, I just hope Ric Flair can rest on the merit that he's done it all, and he should be happy and enjoy the fruits of his labor.
And the thing is, like, a guy like Ric Flair will never fall because everybody loves Ric Flair, and they'll do whatever they can, you know, not to see, you know, the NH, you know, in downtime. So really going to be interesting. Looking forward to November the 7th, and we will definitely make every opportunity we can to get Rory Karp on because he's a very talented director for this 30 for 30. Brian, real quick, Braun Strowman, man. We know he is the man of...
The monster among men.
The monster among men. Thank you.
The man among the small minions because he's a monster.
But he does have a weakness, and that's Karen Jarrett. And I don't know if you if you heard this. He was last week. It wasn't only about the whole Kurt Angle and Jason Jordan thing, but a bunch of the Global Force guys met up with the guys from WWE afterwards, and they went out to for some drinks. They went out at a bar. Braun Strowman was approached by a GFW executive, which turned out to be Karen Jarrett. And she wanted an autograph for her son, which is Kurt Angle's real son. And basically,
wait, Jason Jordan isn't Kurt Angle's real son?
No, it wasn't Jason Jordan. It was his younger
son. I was about to say, why did Jason Jordan have the intestinal fortitude to ask Braun Strowman for the autograph himself? Why did Karen Jarrett have to ask for him?
So Braun was, I guess, kind of brushed her off, didn't really, you know, wasn't really having it, and I could see that, you know what I mean? But did not realize it was Karen Jarrett, and then she said, oh, you know, do you know who I am? Do you know who my husband is? And when he realized that she was the ex-wife of Kurt Angle, whoa, Braun Strowman was like, and we know Braun Strowman, we've seen on Instagram and on Twitter, he's really a great guy, really cordial, but then, you know, sometimes, you know, you just... Really,
everybody has a bad day, folks. Yeah.
And basically, Braun was like, you know what, I'm flying high, I'm main eventing at SummerSlam, and, you know, this is the kind of stuff that wrestling business is crazy, because this could, you know, de-push you, or, you know, you can get on bad terms, and you can, you know, whatever, it is a fickle business.
I don't know how much heat he'll get because
heat
of this, Jeff.
There you go, that's what it is.
For me, what I think is, like, and you told me too, like, he later on tried to apologize, he tried to make up for it.
He was begging for forgiveness,
but here's the thing, and again, I'm not trying to attack Braun Strowman here, but God knows I've done that enough times calling him Braun Greenman. But it's like I would have more respect for Braun if like he just lived up to the Mac. No, I'm not going to do it. It's like, you know, you might be Karen Jarrett, Kurt Angle's ex-wife, and that might have been for Kurt Angle's son. But at the end of the day, if I don't want to sign an autograph, I'm not going to sign an autograph no matter who you are. You know, you have to stand by and be convicted in what you're doing. Now, if he felt he was being a jerk, he could have apologized. I'm sorry.
I
didn't mean to be offensive.
I'd much rather do with Kurt than Karen. Honestly, if it gets back to Kurt, I'd be like, listen, Kurt, you know, yeah, I just had a bad day. I didn't know who it was, and that's it. And, you know.
Yeah, I just had a bad day.
But I just.
But the mere fact that he apologized.
In front of the boys.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, man. You made your choice. You made your bed. Not lying. Don't try to, you know, backtrack and try to make things right. Hey, sorry I offended you, but I just don't feel like signing an autograph right now. I'm sorry. I'll take a photo or whatever, but I just don't feel like it right now. We're all entitled to it. The thing is, as much as we're wrestling fans too, Jeff, I think sometimes wrestling fans think they're entitled to it. They'll say, oh, well, I paid for your house and I paid for you, and that's a whole different thing.
Paid for my house.
But at the same time, it's like they're human beings too. So when you have people, for example, they're out there trying to enjoy their dinner or trying to enjoy themselves at the bar, or even people, you know, going to the bathroom and people come up, can I get a photo? It's so inappropriate.
Yeah. I hate when they do that to me.
Exactly. And, you know, it bothers me beyond belief, but there are some people out there that you just hope. They understand that we're all human beings. Just because you and I are famous for doing the High Spot podcast doesn't put us on any different level than anybody else. And, you know, sometimes you just have to chill. It's not that big of a deal. I've dealt with situations where I've asked somebody for an autograph, not in the bathroom. That would be weird. And they've said no, or they didn't want to take a photo or something. And in the beginning, I'm a little annoyed. But later on, as I got older and wiser with my grays and my beard, you realize it's because they just want to do their thing. They want to be bothered.
Well, somebody who is...
Get over it.
Me?
Get over it, Jeff.
Eventually, somebody's going to have to sign autographs. It's Justin Poland. And last week, we were talking about the G1, talking about Japanese wrestling. And this guy's very knowledgeable. He just came out with his new YouTube download about the G1 this year. Everything you need to know about the G1 for this year. And it's amazing. And eventually, you know, he will be fending off people for autographs because this guy is that good. And we got a lot of praise for last week's show. And I just want to tell it that it's out there. And it's just, again, if you're a novice and you want to know more about the G1 and you want to know what everyone's talking about now, listen, subscribe to his YouTube series, at Real Neat Puro, and, you know, just look at those documentaries. They're only about 10, 15 minutes, and you're going to learn a lot about G1 and New Japan wrestling and all of Japanese wrestling.
Yeah, it's just, he's so well knowledgeable and all that stuff, and it's just amazing that it comes so effortless to him. But again, it's something he's passionate about, and you see it when you hear him doing the interview and you watch these videos. He puts a lot of time and effort into it because it's something he's very passionate about, and you can't do anything but just respect that. So it was really, really great to have Justin on, and we can't wait to have him on again.
Yeah, and if you want to learn more about Justin, then just play back our episode from last week, and you'll hear him on with us talking about the G1. But we got to get into the G1 before we wrap up here. Early stages now in Block A, the top four, you got Tiroshi Tanahashi with 6 points, Tetsuya Naito at 6, Zack Sabre Jr. with 6, and Togi Makabe with 4. So those are your top four in Block A. And in Block B, you've got, of course, Kazuchika Okada with 8 points. He still remains undefeated. Kenny Omega took his first loss. He got 6 points, defeated by Michael Elgin. Evil with 6 and Michael Elgin with 4. Those are your top four.
Damn you, Michael Elgin. Damn you, Michael Elgin.
Those are your top four in each, man. So looking forward to exactly where this leads to, and there's so much more. And of course, August 12th, you get Kenny Omega versus Okada 3.
You know, I'm really looking forward to, be honest with you, the rematch between Okada and Omega. Can't wait to see that happen. In terms of how this is going to be working itself out, I have no idea right now. It's still very fairly early, but if you're, you know, we spoke to Justin, you'd probably say, oh, it's in the inner workings right now where somebody's going to be coming after Victor. I hope it's Kenny Omega. I would like him to make history again, but I don't know how real it is that there would be probably a scenario where the U.S. champion would face the world champion at Wrestle Kingdom. Hope that's the case. He could lose the title prior to that, but again, that would be exciting to see Kenny Omega win it for the second time. Not many people have done that.
You know, Brian, you know what we haven't done? We've gone too far now. We need to wrap it up. And you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Follow us on our all social media platforms, on the Facebook page, on Instagram, on Snapchat, and also we're on iTunes. Leave a subscription. Leave a comment. Leave a review. That's how we know if we're doing a good job or not. And definitely get on the bandwagon with the Jersey Wrecking Crew. You are our crew members, so definitely want to hear from you. Next week, Kevin Knight from the IWF Academy. He's put so many people in the – helped people in the WWE get in there. Such a long list. Of course, one of them is famously is Darren Young. We'll talk to Kevin Knight. You've seen him on you've heard him on SiriusXM Busted Open. You've seen him on MSG Classics talking about MSG and pro wrestling at MSG. Just an amazing guy, and we're getting a chance to talk to him next week. So looking forward to that. But for the Trendsetter, I am Jeff Martin. Can't wait to talk next week and do this again and recap everything that is pro wrestling. Trendsetter, time to say goodbye.
Oh, next week is exciting. We have Kevin Knight. Oh, it's just going to be too sweet.